Welcome to Business Watch. Is it a case of Omicron, keep calm and carry on? Well, just when we were beginning to relax, planning end of year celebrations, long awaited holidays, Christmas parties, SARS-CoV-2 has mutated into a new variant that has shattered the complacency of the last few months. And while there has been much wailing and gnashing of teeth, South African scientists did the right thing in announcing to the world that they had identified a new variant of concern on Thursday afternoon and classified by the World Health Organization on Friday as Omicron. A variant is it significant concern? Well, we don't know yet. So begins a new wave of uncertainty and of frenzy that is reminiscent of what we saw during Beta, and that drove the second wave in December last year, as well as Delta that drove the third wave in June and July. Thankfully, it appears as though government is learning its lessons about how to deal with COVID. In a nutshell, overnight we saw the nation going into level one. We're going to stay in level one effectively, and we can do so if enough citizens get vaccinated. In addition, a task team is going to have a look at mandatory vaccines for certain sectors. And the message, I think, is relatively clear. Get vaccinated or have a plan for your ICU bed, but the days of knee-jerk harsh restrictions appear to be over. There's a lot we still don't know about Omicron, but markets have been forced to reassess their global growth outlook as a result. And we see Pfizer saying that it expects to know within 2 weeks if Omicron is resistant to its current vaccine. And others suggest it may take several weeks. Until then, markets are likely to remain jittery. Well, is all of the hype justified? And what does this mean for business into December? To find out, I'm joined by Professor Adrian Puren, head of the Center for HIV and STIs and currently acting director at the National Institute for Communicable Diseases, the NICD, Dr. Stavros Nicolaou, head of the Health Working Group at Business for South Africa, Tsifiwa Tsivengwa, Chief Executive Officer of the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, and Anthony Phillipson, South Africa's British High Commissioner. Adrian, perhaps you could kick us off here. The big question, I guess, is whether the variant triggered this latest wave or just happened to coincide with it. The data seems suggestive of the former, but it's an odd coincidence that the variant triggered wave could coincide so clearly with previous predictions for when the next wave would be. What do we know about this so far, and causation and correlation, all of those things put to one side?
Yes. So there's no conspiracy around this. I think that we have to accept that the virus is continuously evolving in terms of acquiring mutations as it has from the very outset. And I think that that's always been one of the concerns for many of us, especially I think when we experienced falling Beta and then Delta coming along. I think the fact is that the models certainly took some of that into account, that there would be a variant. So I think that we did have some evidence of what the fourth wave would look like. But I think the changes that we have certainly seen with this particular, it certainly took us by storm, I think, in the sense that we do have the mechanisms to identify new variants. And so this was a variant that has accumulated quite dramatically multiple changes in the spike region. And that's where all this concern is, Pfizer and all the others around the vaccine effectiveness, whether or not those particular changes are meaningful. And they may well be, given that we've seen these particular changes in both Beta and the Delta variant, that it may well affect vaccine effectiveness, but I think we will still have a level of protection. So it comes back to the fact that we may have cases certainly on the increase, which we're currently seeing in Gauteng. But we're hoping, and we haven't seen this, that there's obviously a lag in terms of hospitalizations and deaths. So we're just going to really have to keep a lookout on that. But I think the evidence, all the pointers were there, you know, in terms of an increase in cases, as well as the so-called dropouts in terms of the PCR and breakthrough infections. I think those are all the pointers, I think, and then obviously identifying the actual circulating variant.
There was some mention, I think, by Professor Karim in a presentation this morning around it potentially being more prevalent in younger populations. Now, again, causation, correlation, it would make sense that younger people would be the drivers of a new wave in an area where younger people are more sociable, they're more likely to socialize, and particularly now going into the end of year matric rage festivals as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that does play out. But I want to move the High Commissioner on to the current situation around travel and the red lists. And I think we saw the President rather passionate, rather angry, I thought, in his delivery last night, in that he felt that the G20 Rome Declaration was all about noting the plight of emerging markets by imposing travel bans and restrictions on their tourism sectors. And to quote him here, the commitments were to support rapid, resilient, inclusive and sustainable recovery of the tourism sectors in those markets. How did the UK's decision to ban travel to and from South Africa take that into consideration?
Well, thank you, Michael. These are incredibly difficult circumstances. And as the professor said, they're also very fast moving circumstances. There is a lot we simply don't know. I think the one statements from scientists all around the world who've looked at this new variant is that it is it's the most concerning one that we have seen yet, is what Jenny Harries at the UK HSA said. So this is about trying to create a little bit of time to understand what exactly it is that we're dealing with. What is the challenge that the variant poses in terms of transmissibility, in terms of severity of disease? I think, we're still waiting to see further analysis about whether it is what is driving the increase in cases here in South Africa and here in Gauteng in particular. What we don't, of course, and we won't know for a little bit, is what's the flow through to hospitalization and deaths. And again, as was mentioned, what we don't know is what is the impact on the vaccines that we're all relying on, both in South Africa and, of course, in the UK. So, we heard the president's statement to the nation last night. We certainly understand the concern that this causes and, the sense that this was taken by surprise. We were all taken by surprise. The Prime Minister spoke to the President on Friday. The Foreign Secretary has also exchanged messages with her opposite number, and both really, really reiterated. We moved fast on this because of the sense of concern that was being felt amongst scientific experts around the world. We will not keep these restrictions in place for a moment longer than we feel they are necessary. We do, though, feel they need to give us a little more time so that we slow the moment when the virus, this variant becomes subject to community transmission in the UK. We have 3 cases in the UK, but they are isolated and they are all related to travel from Southern Africa, as I believe is the case for the other isolated cases. So that is what this is about. And, we were at the G20 and we were a partner with South Africa in the G20. We're also a partner in the G7 and the G7 health minister today also to try and get a handle on how we can act together to address the challenge posed by this variant and then work together as we all continue to deal with this ongoing pandemic. And this, of course, is just the latest, although possibly the sharpest and most shocking, iteration of the pandemic that we're facing.
Thank you, High Commissioner. I want to stay with you for a second longer. The President did say last night of South Africa that the prohibition of travel isn't informed by science, nor will it be effective in preventing the spread of this variant. Considering that we do see the variant in several countries on several continents, do you agree with that?
So the decision that we made it at great pace last Thursday, was the priority is to act in a precautionary way in order to understand the public health challenge of this variant. We are certainly aware of the economic damage that this does, including, of course, to the UK. We don't want to be closed to the world. We rely on being open to the world. But this is necessary. We believe it is justified by the science in terms of an immediate response. Give us that time to understand what exactly it is that we're facing and then how we can work together to come out of it. And as the Prime Minister said to the President, we will lift these restrictions as soon as it is possible to do so. And the Foreign Secretary reiterated that message to her counterpart as well.
So if we want to bring you in here, what impact has the recent red listing had on the tourism sector at this critical juncture heading into the South African summer tourist season?
Thank you for having me. This has put a massive strain on the tourism industry for simple fact that we have been looking forward since we have been unbanned or removed from the red list from the UK and other countries. We had seen some pent-up demand. We've seen airlines really adding capacity into South Africa, and boom, when this new variant was announced, everything was wiped out. We have been doing some tallying in terms of, what could this mean? And we're looking at around 1 billion rand that have just been wiped out from our books in the past few hours since this announcement. And this is just what we can account for here on the ground. We're not even talking about the loss from the airlines. We're not talking about the loss from the other expenditure, restaurants and so forth and so on, and other expenditure that we may have had from travelers coming from all over the world before this was announced. So for us, it's a devastation because the entire international inbound has been closed at the moment. We hardly have any airlines that are flying into South Africa. And the devastation is going to be felt for months to come. And, the impact is going to be seen on the employees that are going to be losing their livelihoods. We're going to see this on entrepreneurs that have spent money to prepare for the season. And now there's no one that's coming to see them. The formal side of tourism business, the informal side of tourism business, it's going to be felt across the country, each province. And that just signifies the importance of this type of restrictions and how they devastate the economies. And for us, in our industry, it's even worse. We haven't even started to recover, and we're just, getting by, and we're starting to see some green shoots. And now we have to go back to the drawing board, and we have to go back to convincing various countries and rebuilding the brand's SA, so to speak, to make sure that people can trust and they can still come to South Africa. So it's going to be a long road ahead, and it's going to be bumpy. And I think that we need to have an agreement on how to deal with these things going forward, because the way it's been dealt with, it's not fair to us as a country, and we don't believe that it's fair to our tourism industry.
And I'll address that last point after I've brought you in, Stavros, because I do think there's a risk here for being penalized, or have been seen to be penalized, for having this excellent research capability and this genomic sequencing that we do so well because of our history with TB and HIV, that other countries might not be so willing to come forward in future. And that is a real risk. But on the issue here of the decision to place us on a red list, and the president saying last night that it's not informed by the science and it won't be effective, where does Business for South Africa stand? Do you stand with the president?
Yeah, Michael, firstly, thanks very much for having us on. These are, of course, immensely complex and difficult conversations. And I think at very least what we would have expected is some dialogue to have taken place with our UK counterparts prior to what we deem to be somewhat a knee-jerk reaction. I'm not saying these decisions aren't informed by science, but I think to better manage the consequences and all the fallouts that we're experiencing and the degrees of panic and anxiety that that ensue, I think it would have been very useful on Thursday. Of course, given the urgency to have had an immediate discussion, to have dialogued this, we still might have arrived, of course, at the same endpoint. But I think how we manage these conversations moving forward is something that we would have expected from our British counterparts and partners. So if there's anything to be learnt out of this, is we would like to see a much closer engagement earlier on, before all hell breaks loose, so to speak. And I think that's a fundamental point to take forward. And I think secondly, we are partly the victims of our own success, because we have a very transparent system. We've got good genomic sequencing and surveilling. We're not the only ones that have that capability, incidentally, globally. But we do have a fairly advanced system. And that, of course, if misdirected, does have the consequences that we are now seeing playing out. So in conclusion, Michael, I think what would be immensely useful in the spirit of partnership is that we dialogue these things early on, so that we have possibly the best soft landing that we can get, guided by science, of course, and practicality. And that's where I think we agree with the president. There is the science and the medicine on the one hand, but there's also the practicalities. And you've got to find a delicate balance between the two through a dialogue process.
Adrian, I just have a point from you before I come back to the British High Commissioner, so you can take all of these points on board and respond to them. From the perspective of the NICD and the broader scientific community, who are doing this exceptional work of early detection and genomic sequencing and raising the red flag rather than hiding it, and we saw that pay out to terrible consequence in the early stages of the pandemic in China. What could you have done potentially differently around the communication of this finding? And what have you learned in terms of lessons over the last few days? It is a very difficult, very complex situation.
And so I think the Delta variant is a good example of the types of challenges that we do face, and in particular from the public. So in fact, you know, we had observed the fact that Delta was in circulation early on. But I think the way in which we managed that, again, certainly raised the concerns around the public that we were hiding things. And that, you know, there was this whole conspiracy that we were not being open with the public, not telling them, given the consequences of what we've seen with Delta. But I think the points raised around the communications and the complexities of those complications are certainly important, given the fallout from that. I think it's something that we do need to learn. I think that we do certainly have hierarchies of reporting, and I think that's what we followed, I think, as a country in terms of, you know, responding to WHO. But I think it's that link in terms of the social fallout that I think we probably have to really work on in terms of, well, how do we manage that in terms of not knowing all the facts. We certainly have some of the facts, certain of the pointers, but how do we then work with society and other sectors in order to ensure that we have at least take the public into our confidence in terms of managing this? I think that's the critical lesson for me as well.
Are you worried that other countries, if they do make a similar sort of discovery in the future, are now going to remain quiet, seeing that the response is so punitive?
Well, I think you could certainly argue, if you look at, you know, the evolution of this particular variant, it's possible that, in fact, the variant may have been, you know, in circulation for longer than we think it has been. So in other words, I think it's good fortune that here in South Africa we have that ability to identify it and actually announced it. So I think you're quite right, but I think it will come out in the wash, as it were. Again, if this is a dominant variant, we will become aware of it regardless. And so that comes back to this whole question around how do we manage our borders, in other words, given that even with Delta, I think we thought that we would be protected against Delta, but certainly there were certainly trickles of cases, and then boom, it's overwhelmed us. And it's in the UK, Delta is still the dominant variant, and worldwide as well.
High Commissioner, having listened to all of this, and clearly it's a very dynamic situation. The G7 health ministers are meeting today on how you respond, how you manage the current outbreak, but also how we manage communication around future new variants. Because for as long as the world remains largely unvaccinated in certain parts of the world, we have this threat of mutated variants of the virus. So we can almost be guaranteed we'll see another one in the future. How do we avoid a repeat of some of the missteps that were made here?
So, I mean, thank you very much. Your other panelists have made some really important points. And I mean, believe me, the team and I here in South Africa, we are looking to try and gather as much of this information, feed it all back to our colleagues in London, and make sure that we are having the right conversations to try and find out, trying to find a way forward, as we all, I think, struggled really to do three things at once: to understand the risk that we're facing, to understand the actions that need to be taken to address those risks, and then actually to implement those actions. Because I think, you know, one thing that I feel we have all learned as we've gone through the various phases of this pandemic is, you know, if you take your last point there about vaccine availability all around the world, we are still in the wrong place in terms of vaccines being available to vaccinate everyone in the world. And until that happens, and until we are able also not only to administer vaccines, but then to begin administering boosters to vaccines that keeps pace with, or ideally one step ahead of, the development of the virus itself, then we're going to be still going through the same cycles. If I could just, I mean, come back on a couple of other points. This point about South Africa being punished for being transparent, I mean, I just don't think that is the case. We have made very clear that it is, you know, we commend the excellence of South African science in terms of being able to detect this variant. We commend the openness and the transparency of the scientific community and the government. You know, I don't think it would have been viable to hide it. I don't think it's viable for any country to hide it. I think that's been proven as we've gone through the cycles. And eventually, because of the nature of the way that we are an interconnected world, we will end up all having to deal with these issues together. But in the immediate phase of understanding this and trying to give us that time to to get ahead of what it means for the public health consequences in the UK and indeed in other countries. That's why we did what we did last week. I don't think it was a knee-jerk reaction. I accept that it would have been ideal if there had been more conversation. But this was taken at very, very high speed in order to address the immediate in front of us. And now what we need to do is address the things that we need to do to get back on the track that we had happily got to in early October. Because I very much agree with this issue. We are very aware, I've certainly heard it myself, I've experienced myself, of the importance of the tourism industry to South Africa, and specifically tourism from the UK. I mean, one thing that I think I would highlight, it's not the case that there is no travel now between the UK and South Africa. The UK airlines, British Airways and Virgin, will resume their flights to the UK from South Africa on Wednesday this week. Yes, those who go in will need to qualify in terms of either being UK or Irish nationals or hybrid rights of residence. And yes, they will have to do managed quarantine, but there will be travel. Virgin actually never stopped flying from the UK down here to South Africa, whereas others, I think, have been more abrupt and there is more of a ban. But the final point I'd make, this sense of, you know, the UK and South Africa working together on these issues is what was happening last week. And what now needs to happen as we unpack this with colleagues here, with experts here, to understand what it is that we need to understand together, what it is that we need to work through on the research side together, and then crucially how we work together in the G7, in the G20 and elsewhere to address the challenge that this variant poses. And that's exactly what the Prime Minister said to the President on Friday, and that is exactly what the network here in South Africa is focused on doing. It's pretty much the only thing we're doing at the minute, because we recognise the importance of moving forward as quickly as possible.
Thank you, High Commissioner. Just on the point of mandatory vaccinations, we did have the President say that there's going to be a task team now appointed and he's going to be reporting back in a week's time, because it's recognised as one of the key risks. In South Africa, we've had a very low uptake of freely and readily available vaccines, so potentially not a problem now of the pipeline of vaccines, but vaccine hesitancy. What is your position on mandatory vaccinations? And give us some insights into how the UK managed to get its vaccination rates to the level that it has achieved, which are well over double South Africa's.
Well, I caveat this slightly by saying, of course, I'm not sitting at the UK end of these discussions. I would just observe, though, that when the Prime Minister gave his address over the weekend about how we were going to react to the advance of the heightened risk of Omicron, you know, obviously he was talking about going back to mandatory masks and social distancing, which, of course, lots of people have said to me South Africa has been doing for a long time, and that's absolutely right. The UK, I think, made very quick progress in its vaccination programme at the beginning. I think now, though, if you listen to the Prime Minister and his ministers, they are urging people, A, to get their vaccinations if they haven't already done so, and we are moving forward with booster vaccinations for those who had them some time ago and are in certain categories. So I think that's what we're doing at the UK end. I think we are watching the debate in a range of countries, including, of course, here in South Africa, about where they go on things like vaccine mandates. We have require them for some sectors of our economy, in the health sector, the care community and things like that. So I think, you know, we are all watching to see what is the best way of incentivizing people to get those vaccinations that are so important. And as I say, we have watched that debate very closely here in South Africa. And in your words, Michael, I think I very much agree. It is a question not of supply, but of uptake. And again, you know, we are looking to see if we can be helpful on that. But that, I think, is, you know, being very powerfully put by the President and his cabinet down here.
Thanks, High Commissioner. Stavros, obviously the President signalling the importance of vaccine mandates last night, and to the High Commissioner's point, you've supported this as Business for South Africa. We know there are other organisations, Sakalecha, Zantaco, who have become vocally opposed to mandates. How do you see mandates potentially playing out and striking the right balance in such a volatile environment?
Michael, just before I respond to that, I think it would be remiss of me not just to make a very short cursory comment in response to what the High Commissioner said, right? I think the issue that South African business took with the way things were communicated out of the UK last Friday was that it created a perception, and perceptions are exactly that. That this was a South African variant again, as was the case with the Beta variant. That is why what we were calling for is a much closer communicative collaboration ahead of time. So many countries around the world now think that we're a breeding ground for these variants. That is not the case, because we know that this variant was found in inter alia Belgium and other places around the world. Right now, we don't know where it emanated. But when investors spoke to us on Friday, they were getting an impression off the back of some of the communication that took place out of the UK, that this was a repeat of Beta. It's a South African variant. That's very damaging to our economy and to confidence building. And I think that is the point I think that we were trying to make, Michael. So now let me move off that point. I did need to respond to the High Commissioner on that. Let me move on to the question that you're asking me about. What do we know at the moment? And Professor Puren has given us an inkling of that. We know that further data and evidence is required with respect to the efficacy of the current suite of vaccines against this new variant. Okay? However, speaking pharmacologically, we know the mechanism of action of these vaccines, whether it's mRNA or viral vector, and there is a likelihood that these vaccines will demonstrate efficacy. Can we say it definitively? We can't. The next few weeks are critical. They're critical inter alia because we will see what our hospitalization rates look like in the next few days. Are we expecting the cases to ramp up? We most certainly are. I will not be surprised if we hit the 10,000 mark in the next few days in South Africa, right? But the inkling here is that these vaccines are likely to demonstrate some efficacy. So now let me answer your question around mandatory vaccinations. Given what I've just said, mandatory vaccinations and or restricted access for those who are unvaccinated remains a very important tool in the overall management of the pandemic. And it is a little disheartening that we have dilly-dallied around this issue here in South Africa. We should be taking and ought to be taking a much firmer stance. By way of example, we've seen what France and Kenya have managed to achieve. So Kenya have announced from the 21st of December that Kenyans will not be able to access any public facilities and or amenities. So you can't get, Michael, onto a plane, a bus or a train unless you're vaccinated. So there's an African country, because people say we always compare ourselves to Europe. Well, here's an African country that has drawn a line in the sand. It's the 21st of December. And although we encourage that the president has called for this task team, which will be consultative, we do at some point in time need to draw a line in the sand in the interest of saving lives and livelihoods, because restricted access, right, even if it's not mandates, are a very effective way in managing this pandemic, and we ought to move sooner rather than later.
Stavros, thank you very much. Sadly, we have run out of time. That was Dr. Stavros Nicolaou, head of the Health Working Group of Business for South Africa, joined around the table by Professor Adrian Puren, head of the Center for HIV and STIs and currently acting director of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases, Tafiwa Tevengwa, Chief Executive Officer of the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, and Anthony Phillipson, British High Commissioner, talking about the latest developments around Omicron here on Business Watch on Business Day TV.